From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Dylan Roof is charged with shooting and killing 9 people in a church in Charleston, South Carolina. John Hauser killed 2 in a movie theater in Louisiana, wounded 9. Both bought their guns legally, even though the federal background check system should have stopped them. Now there's a cry to strengthen the background check process to tighten up against purchases by convicted criminals, the mentally ill, drug users. Gun rights critics say forget it, but many Americans are looking for some answer to the death toll. This hour on Point, guns, background checks, and the holes in our system. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How should we, could we, tighten up? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is James Burnett. He's editorial director for The Trace. It's a nonprofit media organization. They're dedicated to expanding coverage of guns in the United States. Seed funding came from Every Town for Gun Safety, which was launched by Michael Bloomberg, a well-known advocate of more gun control. James Burnett, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Can you help us look at these 2 cases? And I know there are more, but we've got a very big background check system in this country, and somehow, in the cases of Dylan Roof and of John Hauser, they slipped through. Do you know those stories, John?
I do, Tom. We can start with Dylan Roof. In that case, what happened, and I should say, you know, it's complicated. It's really the headline here. Mm-hmm. But what we need to look at is how the records work. So in Roof's case, he has an arrest for drug possession, but that case has not been fully adjudicated. He's not convicted. He would need to be convicted for the flag to be thrown in the background check system, except there's another way. If you confess to drug use, that confession is a disqualifier for gun ownership.
And he did confess, right?
And he did confess. So that record is the record that should throw the flag during the background check system. But
so when he walked into the gun shop to buy the Glock that ended up killing 9 people famously in the church in Charleston, why didn't it show up?
Well, what you have to understand about the background check system, I think we think in, by standards of modern technology, right, that everything's going to be digitized, that when the request comes in for the background check, the file is there. But in fact, a lot of this happens manually still. So what the background check examiner, when the first call comes in to do the background check, they see that there's a question raised, there's something in this file we need to check. That then is handed to an FBI examiner who has 3 business days to figure out, well, what's going on here? You know, just what's going on here. And she makes the call to the local jurisdiction, but in fact, the paperwork is with a different county, because Columbia, South Carolina, where the gun store is in this case, or rather where the arrest was, is in one county. She calls the other county, and you know, the record just hadn't made it up to the system. 3 business days expire, and after 3 business days, the sale is allowed to move forward on a default proceed. Not all retailers will complete the sale. Walmart, in fact, most prominently, doesn't do a sale unless the background check is finished. But his background check is incomplete, but the law allows the sale to proceed, and so that's what happens.
So the gun shop didn't have to sell it. They could have waited, but after 3 days, they don't have to, and they didn't. And the Glock was sold to Dylan Roof, and the rest is a tragic history.
That's right.
What about the John Hauser case? Now, this is a guy who's moved across the South from Georgia to Alabama. The shooting was in Louisiana. There was a record of psychological trouble here, but that didn't stop him from buying the gun that ended up killing 2 40 caliber semi-automatic handgun at a pawn shop last year. Should that have shown up?
Well, this one is in fact maybe even more tricky, and here's the reason why. Mm-hmm. The disqualifiers in a mental health history are very specific, and they're very specific for some good reasons. In other words, voluntary commitments. If you voluntarily check yourself into a mental hospital, that won't disqualify you. And the reason that won't is because they're advocates for the mentally ill who don't want to discourage people from seeking treatment. So that's one reason. In this case, a judge orders him involuntarily committed at the family's request for a brief stay, but there needs to be a second separate adjudication where he is ordered held for a longer period of a period of time. Without that second case, and we actually don't know what happens because the probate record is sealed, and it's sealed for privacy reasons. So all we know is he's held in a psychiatric hospital for some, at this point, unknown period of time, but it's not a formal final adjudication for mental health treatment, involuntary mental health treatment. So it doesn't throw the flag at all in that case. Because the bar is set pretty high, basically.
And you have to be involuntarily committed, and the record of that get into the system and go on up. But again, there, a troubled man whose purchase of that .40 caliber semi-automatic handgun ends up being the weapon that kills two and wounds nine in a movie theater. Here's just on Sunday, James, this is Louisiana Governor, Republican presidential candidate Bobby Jindal, saying that shooter, John Hauser, should not have been able to buy a gun.
That never should have happened. You know, here in Louisiana, we actually passed tougher laws a couple of years ago so that, for example, if Hauser had been involuntarily committed here in Louisiana, that information would have automatically, we would have reported that to the National Background Check System. He wouldn't have been able to buy a gun. He wouldn't have been able to go into that pawn shop and buy that gun as he did in another state.
There, Bobby Jindal talking about the shooter in Lafayette, Louisiana. James Burnett, please stand by in New York. Richard Perez Pena joins us from New York as well, national reporter for the New York Times. He's been reporting on holes in the national background check system. Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I mean, the overall numbers here, since 1998, I'm reading, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, I guess, is it's called for short, has processed a total of 202 plus million transactions. 1.1 plus million have been denied. Is this a system that is generally working? Is it just a weird sort of wrinkle of fate that both of these recent very, very prominent shooters got through?
Well, there are a lot of wrinkles, unfortunately. There have been really inconsistent participation by the states, particularly when it comes to mentally ill people. Generally, the systems for getting people who have felony records onto the prohibited list so that they fail a background check, generally that works pretty well. But the systems for getting people who've been adjudicated mentally ill, committed to a mental hospital, that doesn't work so well. It works better than it did before the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007. There was a big push then to get states to add more people to the list.
Remind us why, Richard, what happened in that case?
Yeah, that was actually, I believe, the worst mass shooting in American history. A student at Virginia Tech killed 32 people and himself.
Was there a failure of the background check system there?
Actually, no. He had never been involuntarily committed. He had been treated on an outpatient basis and was recognized, you know, by basically everybody around him as mentally ill. But no, he never would have failed a background check. But going back to what Governor Jindal said about how they had passed a law so that these things were automatically sent to the federal list, most states were already doing that. And gun control advocates say, you know, that in fact it didn't require a law. People in Louisiana disagree, but the fact is it took them 15, 16 years after the system was created to pass that law so that up until last year or up until 2013, Louisiana had ever put a grand total of four names on that list of prohibited buyers for mental health reasons.
Four in other all state, of history, okay?
Yes, and the national total was well over a million. Four from Louisiana. Georgia, where he actually was hospitalized, although not involuntarily committed by the technical definition, never had a prohibition on reporting those names to the national list, but was doing a pretty poor job of it. The most recent figures is that Georgia has put fewer than 9,000 names on the national list for mental health reasons. Virginia, which has a smaller population than Georgia, has put 231,000 on the list for mental health reasons versus 9,000.
Richard,
so the participation is just all over the map.
Is there bipartisan consensus that as long as we have this background check system, we ought to make it work well? That
absolutely, yeah.
I mean, we heard Bobby Jindal saying it ought to work better. James Burnett, if there's bipartisan consensus, why don't we see a very buttoned-up system here? Is it the states' rights? Is it the NRA lobbying at the state level, federal level? What's going on?
Well, one thing you do hear is that there's an expense involved in updating the records and reporting all the records, and you know, that there are systems and manpower required for this. Interestingly, in 2008, President Bush signed a bill that authorized $1 billion in grants, more than $1 billion in grants, that would have improved local records reporting. And Congress at the time reported that, I think, 21 million criminal records were missing from the system. That's not getting into the mental health side of it at all. But that's just the authorization. Then you have to appropriate the funds. You have to have the grant program, the grants issued, and very little money, you know, something like 10%, 11% of the money has actually been spent. And so, because there's trade-offs, because those appropriations are going to come at the expense of something else, there are concerns that if you land on the prohibited list, that you have a way to petition to have your gun rights restored. That's thought to be maybe one of the things that slowed it down, is getting those provisions in place, again, where you can petition and appeal if you think that you've been denied inappropriately. Although we know that states are passing those laws and it hasn't increased the grants. So, you know, I think that there is a, there's maybe bipartisan consensus, but then the harder work and the political will to get that done has not been entirely there.
And Richard, we just have a few seconds before the break here, but there's also pushback from some gun rights advocates saying background checks ultimately are not effective enough. Scrap it. Just give people guns.
That's actually not the position of the NRA. They're saying that this system, you know, is a good one. They advocated the law that your other guest was talking about, that President Bush signed in 2008. Their position is fix this system before you move on to something else.
So what do we do? Fix it? Can it be fixed? Can it be tightened well enough to stop the kind of killings we saw in Charleston, we saw in Lafayette, Louisiana? Of course, 40% of guns in this country not sold at gun shops, but in gun shows and privately not covered by background checks. James Burnett at The Trace, editorial director there, joining us from New York. Thank you so much for being here, James.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about guns, background checks, and shootings, mass shootings lately, where red flag gun buyers have slipped through the significant cracks in the background check system. John Hauser in the Louisiana shooting, Lafayette, Louisiana, in the movie theater, Dylann Roof in South Carolina, infamously, famously, 9 dead there, and more. After the arrest of Dylann Roof, the FBI said in a statement that he should not have been able to buy a gun, that a clerical error was one of the oversights that allowed him to get that weapon allegedly used in the shooting in Charleston in June. Reverend Anthony Thompson, husband of one of the victims of the shooting, Myra Thompson, expressed his disappointment at that oversight.
When I found this out today, it made me angry, you know, and I wasn't angry at Dylann. I was angry at the system.
It should have worked. And then in Louisiana, here's Democratic Louisiana State Rep Terry Landry Sr. called for stricter gun control at a press conference just last Friday after the shooting in the movie theater in Lafayette, Louisiana.
It is our job as legislature to close the loopholes in these gun laws. When a person that has a mental capacity or not mental stable can get access to a gun and wreak havoc on our community, it tells us we have to have a serious conversation. We have to have some serious repeals and some of these lack of gun restrictions in our community.
Richard Perez Pena has written about gaps in the background check system for the New York Times. National reporter for the Times joins us from New York. You can link to his story at our website, onpointradio.org. With us as well from Washington right now is Arkady Gurney. He's senior vice president at the Center for American Progress. Research focuses on crime, gun policy. Arkady Gurney, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Overall, do we have an effective background check system, or do we have, you know, Swiss cheese?
Well, there's sort of good news and bad news, which I think Richard and James sort of discussed a little bit. The good news is that since the background check system went into full effect since 1999, there have been 2.4 million sales that have been blocked. Tom, I think you mentioned a million figure.
That's 2.4, okay.
It's 2.4 because there are a number of states that interact with the federal system and run the checks themselves. When you add in the ones that they've blocked, it's 2.4 million times. So that's very good news. On the mental mental health records. Both of your guests talked about this 2008 law that was passed after Virginia Tech. The good news there is the total number of mental health records in the background check system has grown from less than 300,000 records to more than 3.7 million records today. So that's good news. The problem is there are still a number of gaps. One of them is that many states are not reporting enough records, and Louisiana and Georgia are among those states that aren't reporting enough records. And there are problems in terms of linking databases that came up in the Charleston shooting, where there was this information about the drug admission, but the FBI examiner wasn't able to see it in time. And another problem is that not all gun sales in this country require a background check. That was the legislation in Congress after the Newtown shooting to make sure that the guns that are sold by private citizens at gun shows online and parking lots require a background check. Under federal law, it's still permitted for people to go to a parking lot and sell five guns out of the trunk of their car, no questions asked.
Richard Perez Pena, does that make a mockery of all this concern about holes in the background check system when the number that gets pushed around here is 40% of gun sales in this country don't come across the counter of the kind of gun shop that would have to participate in the background check system? Does that make a joke of it all anyway?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a judgment call.
40% is a pretty eye-catching number.
It's a very eye-catching number. Obviously, it's a huge gap in the system. I don't know if the 40% figure is accurate. I don't think anybody really knows how many unregulated sales are taking place because they're unregulated. That's an estimate that's used by the gun control advocates. The other side says it's high, but I have no idea where the reality is. But yeah, there's no question that while the background check works as far as it goes, it's got areas that it just doesn't cover.
I mean, Arkady, what about it? 40%, if it's anywhere in that ballpark, we're talking many, many, many guns here. Does that number ring true to you?
You know, we don't, I think as Richard says, because it's unregulated, because there are no records, we have no idea exactly how many sales that is a year. 40% is one estimate. But the problem really isn't what percentage of all sales are no background check sales. What's most important is when you think about how criminals are acquiring guns, how often are they using these loopholes? And there is a survey that was done of people in federal prisons who used guns in crimes. And two-thirds of them reported that using these no background check purchases and transfers is how they got their guns. So the biggest problem is that if you have these gaps, that the people who we really want to prevent from accessing guns are the ones who are going to try to exploit the gaps.
I mean, there's many populations that we would like to keep from guns. Criminals, of course. But in these mass shootings, it's often not necessarily people with big, serious criminal backgrounds who are participating, and they've gone right out to gun stores and bought these. Getting a lot of attention. Here was a press conference yesterday in Washington. We had Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, with other senators there calling on gun stores to end that loophole that allows stores to sell to someone if the FBI takes longer than 3 days to complete the background check. Here's Schumer.
Enough is enough. We have to tighten our background check system Before the next tragedy strikes.
Before the next tragedy strikes, but who knows if that will happen. Here was Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut, saying the same point here. Let's tighten up at the retail point here.
The fundamental central principle is no background check, no gun. That is the single most effective way to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people who may be convicted felons or drug addicts or domestic abusers under court orders, or, yes, dangerous because they have been committed for mental health care.
Richard Perez Pena with the New York Times. There's the latest battle cry, no background check, no gun. I guess that is the Walmart policy at this point, right?
Right. There are some big retailers like Walmart that say, look, even if we haven't gotten a no from the feds within 3 days, if we haven't gotten a yes either, that yes, you are okay to buy a gun, we're just not going to sell it to you. But little retailers aren't going to abide by that, and they generally don't. I would note, though, that there are a lot of states that have passed their own laws that require background checks on all sales, even if they happen at gun shows, even if they happen in a parking lot, even if they happen online. So some states, at least, are filling in some of these gaps that are left in the federal law.
So some are being more aggressive at the state level.
Absolutely.
Arkady, when states are not reporting records, does that look to you like it's a problem with capacity? They just don't have the person power to push that data through? Or does it look like a kind of resistance, political resistance, ideological resistance to background checks, gun control generally?
Well, I think there are many reasons for it, you know, which range from that sort of gap between the amount of money that was authorized by Congress and the amount of money that Congress has actually provided, between what some concern in some states about health privacy laws and having to adjust state laws. There are many different reasons for many different states, but the basic issue has to be these incidents, Virginia Tech, what happened in Louisiana, they should be a wake-up call. And what states should do is look at their laws, look at the gaps, and do it regardless of whether they're going to be more federal resources for it. They should do it because it's the right thing to do to keep people safe. And you know, I think as Richard said, there has been a number of states that have closed these gaps, have closed the gaps on the private sellers to make sure that every gun goes through a background check. And there's been some momentum on that with states enacting those laws since Newtown. Colorado, Oregon, and Washington last year did it with a ballot initiative that 60% of the people in the state voted for.
There's a lot of passion around it, particularly as we see these mass shootings, though many Americans die from gunshot, of course. But here with the talking with PBS NewsHour, just less than a week ago, Mark Kelly, husband of former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who of course was shot in 2011, talked about the importance of getting on top of this.
Congress is perfectly capable of doing something about it, but they choose not to. And that's something that people should demand. They should demand action, because unless we make changes to our laws and changes to easy access for felons, domestic abusers, people that are mentally ill, we'll continue to see this very high rate of gun violence.
Gabby Gifford's husband there, Mark Kelly, just in the last week. David in Franklin, Tennessee is calling. Hi, David. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I'm thinking that there is a missing reality going on.
Okay. What do you see?
I do not see this being fixed, because the reality is, we assume that when we beat our chest, thump our chest, and say, do this, it will be done. There are not enough people. Everything is a keystroke. People put in a full day. Think of the backlog in all of these organizations throughout the government. Pass more legislation. More stuff won't be done. And here's the thing. If it takes 30 minutes labor to process something, you can calculate one person can do 16 a day. But so these people will say, we need 500 people to do data entry. Congress says, here's 20. Do the best you can. And from the description, it sounds like some of these background checks take full days. So people in offices work diligently to get things done, but they can only do so many a day. So unless Congress wants to appoint enough money to really run these physical keystrokes,
mm-hmm.
there's not going to be any change.
So, David, what do you take away from that? That we should just throw up our hands and say, well, let anybody, regardless of their criminal background, their psychiatric background, walk into Walmart or anywhere else and buy an arsenal?
Oh, absolutely not.
Then what?
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm in favor of it, but I'm saying that we pass these laws, and the physical reality is that people have got to be able to do the data entry. And this offices have been so downsized across the board throughout the whole government. So let me just say, I don't see a simple solution, because, like I said, here's 20. Do the best you can.
No, there's a kind of awareness of reality in the words you speak right there, David. Arkady, what about it? Time is an issue. Person power is an issue. What's the answer here? Should Americans' expectation of a fast purchase of a gun have to come into question here. If it takes 5 days, should that be the wait? If it takes 30 days, should that be the wait?
Well, the good news is that for 91% of gun buyers, the check is instant. So it's a green light or a red light 91% of the time just within a few minutes. But for 9% of these gun sales, there's some sort of flag that causes the need for additional investigation. And the problem is that 3% of them ultimately are not resolved within 72 hours and those sales go through. And we know from the data that the ones that aren't resolved in three days are 8 times more likely to ultimately involve a prohibited purchaser than the ones that are quickly resolved. So I think that trying to get the data in is a challenge. It requires both work from the federal government and from state criminal justice and mental health agencies. But a system is coming together. It is working well in a number of ways. I think what we have to understand with gun violence is that we're not going to close every single gap. We're not going to stop every single mass shooter. But if we can add some additional protections, we're going to stop some of them. And in a country with 12,000 people being murdered with guns every year, stopping some of them is a worthwhile pursuit.
Just a small bite out of 12,000 can still be a lot of people. Mike in Charlotte, Vermont. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I'm a state representative in Vermont, and this past year we had a very difficult time. We tried to pass universal background checks. It also included a provision that would report people who have been adjudicated to be mentally ill and dangerous to themselves or others.
Mike, may I ask you what you mean by universal background check? Would that be something different than the federal system now?
This basically would be a requirement to for any firearm transaction except between relatives.
So including gun shows and private sales online?
Gun shows, private sales, okay. Online sales.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll have to go through the background check.
Yep.
That was lobbied against intensively by the local authority of the affiliate of the NRA. And it was very difficult. It seems like politicians are, a lot of politicians, I won't say all of them, a lot of politicians are cowed by the NRA, the threats that you're taking away our Second Amendment rights and we're going to vote against in our next election. And we were fortunate to be able to overcome at least we were able to pass the provision that required the reporting of, mentally dangerous people.
Yep.
To the NCIC database. But unfortunately, the provision that would plug the gun show loophole failed. And it was kind of unfortunate. Vermont has some of the least restrictive gun regulations in our entire country. And just to get this one thing passed, I think, was a major accomplishment. Seems any time we try to propose a bill, even something like requiring trigger locks in homes where children live, people come out saying you're infringing on our Second Amendment rights. And I wish people would really read the Second Amendment and see that it's a well-regulated militia that's protected and not willy-nilly guns all over the place.
Mike Yamtochka, Democratic rep in state rep in Vermont. I appreciate your call, Representative Yamtochka. We've just got a minute here, but Arkady, this universal background check, is there momentum behind that would require all buyers everywhere except for between family members to go through the background check system?
Well, yeah, I think there is. It's passed in a few states, Oregon, Colorado, Washington State, just in the last couple of years. Didn't seem to get through in Vermont, but I think what advocates have to do is keep trying, keep making the arguments, keep organizing. That's certainly what the other side has done on the gun issue.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about guns, background checks, and shootings, mass shootings lately, where red flag gun buyers slip through the significant cracks in the background check system. Many are stopped there for criminal records, for issues with psychiatric health. But in the case of Dylan Roof, in the case of John Hauser, that is Charleston and Lafayette, Louisiana, complicated situations, and they got through. A Glock, in the case of Dylan Roof, purchased across the counter. A 40 caliber automatic pistol, in the case of John Hauser, purchased at a pawn shop. The National Background Check System might have stopped them. It did not. Richard Perez-Pena is with us from New York, national reporter for the New York Times. Arkady Gurney is with us from Washington at the Center for American Progress. We'll hear in a moment from Larry Pratt, executive director of Gun Owners of America. They oppose tighter background checks, say the whole system doesn't really work. Their answer, more guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens. It's a big issue. People in this country see these big killings, and it's just a staggering thing to see. President Obama talked about it with the BBC on Friday.
If you ask me where has been the one area where I feel that I've been most frustrated and most stymied, it is the fact that the United States of America is the one advanced nation on earth in which we do not have sufficient common sense gun safety laws, even in the face of repeated mass killings.
West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, pretty moderate, on CBS on Sunday, saying, look, this isn't gun control. It's just know who's buying the guns.
It's really not gun control, it's just gun sense. Basically, I don't know of a law-abiding gun owner that wants a person that's been adjudicated mentally or a criminal to be able to get a gun. And all we're saying is shut down the loopholes as far as in the background checks.
But others say, well, maybe guns are the answer. We had former Texas governor, current Republican presidential candidate Rick Perry, talking with CNN on Sunday about the shootings in Charleston and Lafayette, Louisiana. In Louisiana, the movie theater had a policy of no guns in the theater. The governor, former governor Perry, said maybe that was a bad idea.
I think we have the laws in place. Enforcement of those laws is what seems to be lacking both in Charleston and here in Lafayette, Louisiana. We see individuals who were obviously mentally impacted. I will suggest to you that these concepts of gun-free zones are a bad idea. I think that you allow the citizens of this country who have been appropriately trained, appropriately backgrounded, know how to handle and use firearms to carry them.
More guns, one of the answers out there. They're from Rick Perry. Lots of response online here. Susie writes to us, what about the rights of Americans not to get shot when they go to the movies? Michael writes, with the sheer volume of guns in the U.S., if it wasn't working, that is background checks, at all, we'd be seeing these tragedies every other day. Even so, they're too common. John writes, the seller of a gun who does not perform the background check should at least be civilly liable for damages. Of course, everybody in a gun shop has to bang those the check information in, but they don't have to wait beyond 3 days. Some in Congress now calling for that kind of restraint. Walmart already waits until it gets the answer if a flag comes up. Steve in Clear Lake, Iowa. Steve, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
I am a federally licensed firearms dealer, and I'm looking right now at the form that has to be filled out by the buyer.
Yes, sir.
And the some of the information that has been put out about what the form says is not exactly correct.
Okay.
In the case of whether the person is under indictment, the question reads, are you under indictment or information in any court for a felony or any other crime for which the judge could imprison you for more than 1 year?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's another question about mental health, and I can read that if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Are you an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana, or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance. And then the last one that applies, have you ever been adjudicated mentally defective, which includes a determination by a court, board, commission, or other lawful authority that you are a danger to yourself or to others, or are incompetent to manage your own affairs, or, bold and capitalized, have you ever been committed to a mental institution?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say anything about self-commitment, or it just says, have you ever been committed?
Steve, may I ask you, and I appreciate your call, you are a federally licensed firearms dealer. When you make sales, do you feel consistently confident that the person you're selling to is competent to buy and own the firearms you sell?
Yes. If I did not, I would not.
Can you see a way to make the background check system work better from your perspective across the sales counter?
Yes.
How?
Well, I am also a data processing, an IT professional.
Okay.
The data that is entered when an arrest is recorded could be almost instantly transferred into the federal system. It would take some work. It would take some cooperation. But there's no reason it would take any time at all on the for the operator, the person inputting the data, to have to do anything else when an arrest is made. The system could be written to automatically transfer that arrest data, or the arrest data in particular,
yep,
to the NICS system.
Hey, Steve, let me ask you also, does this really depend on the voluntary sharing of this information by the potential buyer? Don't you plug in the Social Security or a driver's license or some identifying number that would trigger, some scan of databases?
The buyer has to have government ID with a number on it, and that is part of the transaction.
Steve, I really appreciate your call as a seller right there. Richard Paris Penney, you're listening here. Surely the voluntary submission of information is not the whole story.
Right. Some of what he's describing in terms of information automatically being shared, some of that does take place. You present identification so that they know who they're looking at. But for instance, in the case of Dylan Roof, the FBI examiner was able to look at records and see that he'd been arrested recently. The foul up was in figuring out precisely what he'd been arrested for and where the case stood, because they contacted the wrong jurisdiction. It's not depending entirely on self-disclosure.
We had the head of the FBI, James Comey, talking about the Roof case and the fact that they didn't catch that in the background check system. And he said, told reporters at a closed door gathering, this case rips all of our hearts out, wishing it had worked better. Jay in Tampa, Florida. Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The first thing I want to say is that there's a lot of different types of gun crime, and that means we need a good series of laws, not just one solution. My question is, what penalties, fines, jail time exists for people who are making illegal gun sales? Because I think there's a huge number of folks who either don't care or know full on that they are making sales to people who may not have, who should not have guns.
Let us pick it up. Arkady, there seems to be plenty of room for gun sales outside the background check system at this point with gun shows and all the rest. Is there a significant problem with gun sales that flout the law?
Yes. And one of the challenges is, and this came up, was one of the legislative proposals that came up after the Newtown shooting, is that the federal laws around gun trafficking and straw purchasing is when somebody asks someone who cannot purchase a gun, asks someone to buy it on their behalf. The federal laws around that are not that clear and not that strong, and there was a bill to make them stronger. It had some bipartisan support, but it also did not get through. And right now, the federal law for trafficking guns across state lines is less than the federal law for trafficking chickens illegally across state lines. So that is one of the things that should change.
Let's go to Robert calling from Somerville, South Carolina. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think, Robert?
Hey, I think the idea about law-abiding citizens that are able to carry weapons, let them carry weapons. I mean, in the case of the massacre of Virginia Tech, if one or two students were armed, they may have been able to stop the massacre from happening. If one or two principal or assistant principal, say, in that school in Sandy Hook would have had a weapon, they may have been able to stop that shooter from killing one of those kids. I mean, I've done almost 24 years in the military. I think I'm capable of firing weapons and know the rules, but I still would have to take an AR course and qualify with a weapon to get it as a law-abiding citizen.
I got it, Robert, but would you want to be in that theater in Lafayette, Louisiana, if you got a big crossfire? Everybody put out their guns and started shooting?
Well, that doesn't mean everyone's going to do that. However, do you think I'm going to wait on the police and they're going to be effective when the shooter's in there with, let's say, a semi-automatic weapon, just killing people like the case that happened at the school?
Or in Louisiana. Robert, I appreciate your call. We'll go to Larry Pratt. This was Emily Mann. She was in that theater in Lafayette, Louisiana, telling here ABC News about what happened.
I saw him standing. He was wearing a hat, a big jacket, and I could just see his, you know, hand going in a semicircle and the lights coming.
Would we have been better off if a background check had stopped that? Better off if other citizens in the theater had been armed? Larry Pratt joins us now from Springfield, Virginia, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. Larry Pratt, welcome. What about background checks as the answer to that and other of these mass shooting incidents?
Well, from what we've been able to see, relying on background checks is a false security. They've resulted in the last year of record, when they did some 11 million checks, 14 convictions for violating that law. However, in all of the cases since 1950 where there was a mass murder, save two, all took place in a gun-free zone. The idea that somehow there's going to be innocent people gunned down by a defender, whether it be in a theater or any place else, that just doesn't happen. And we do know that armed people do stop mass murders. There was a doctor in a Darby hospital in Pennsylvania where it was prohibited to have concealed carry firearms. Happily, he had ignored that because a patient came in, killed his caseworker, and was shooting at the doctor when the doctor was able to shoot back and stop the killer.
Larry Pratt, you're Gun Owners of America. Are you tougher than the NRA on background checks? They seem open to the background check system. Is your group not?
We have opposed them from the beginning as something that is not only unconstitutional, proving yourself innocent till proven. You know, you have to prove your innocence in that situation. And again, it doesn't end up protecting people. It just gives people a sort of a sense of false security. They're much better off if they can protect themselves, even in those gun-free zones. People who have had guns for self-defense have been able to stop killers. There was a mall in Clackamas, Oregon, same situation. Guns were prohibited. Bad guy came in, evidently intent from all the ammo he had on committing mass murder, and he was stopped by somebody who, outside the mall, would have been perfectly legal with a concealed carry firearm. And happily, the guy had his concealed carry firearm and stopped the killer.
Arkady Gurney, what about this argument? It's armed people that stop mass murderers, a false sense of security otherwise.
Well, the data that Mr. Pratt described is not consistent with the data I've seen. I've seen a report from Mother Jones magazine that puts it at about 1 in 6 mass shootings that take place in these so-called gun-free zones. But regardless of whether you think it's a good idea to have lots of armed private citizens, I think we should all agree that it's not a good idea to have highly armed felons and highly armed mentally ill people. The example I like to use is after 9/11, the FAA came up with a program to arm some pilots. It required a lot of training and required a lot of background checks, and they gave some guns to some pilots in the cockpit. But We didn't do that to the exclusion of taking out the screening in the airports. That would have been crazy to do that. And we didn't do that by arming all the passengers. So it may be helpful, and there certainly are cases where armed private citizens have protected their own lives and those of others. And so that can happen. But it still doesn't make sense to make it really easy for very dangerous people to easily get a gun.
Richard Perez Pena at the New York Times. Larry Pratt's calling to step down on background checks. We've heard the call in this hour to step up on that front. What would that mean? What material steps might be taken that would tighten the system?
Well, one would be to have better and more automated cooperation from the states. You know, have systems where you had a caller earlier talking about the number of keystrokes. But as another caller pointed out, you know, you could make all of this fairly automatic when somebody is adjudicated, you know, a threat to himself or somebody else, or mm-hmm. is convicted of a felony. That could automatically, you know, it automatically goes into a state database. Those should communicate with the federal databases. That would be one way to tighten it up. But another would be going back through older records. There hasn't been that much of that done. Some states have done it. You know, they get on the ball about putting records into the system and adding names to the prohibited list, but then they don't go back and put in the names that they'd neglected to put in prior years. But since there was a push made to make the list more comprehensive after the Virginia Tech shooting, the number of names of prohibited buyers has tripled. So there are things you can do to increase the effectiveness of it.
Full-on universal background checks. We've heard that call in this hour. Scrap it all, Larry Pratt says, at Gun Owners of America. Richard Perez Pena says, even within our system, there's more that could be done. And there we stand, waiting for what? Action or the next killing? Richard Perez Pena at the New York Times. We're grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Arkady Gurney with the Center for American Progress. Thanks so much for being here, Arkady.
Thanks, Tom.
And Larry Pratt, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Tomorrow in this hour, we will look at the computer coding boot camps springing up all over the place. People vaulting from, whatever they've been doing, barista, you name it, to pretty good jobs in pretty short time. Join us for that. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.